Welcome to the Speak Up Talk Radio Network. I am your hostess, Pat Rulo. We bring you hand-selected hosts, podcasts, and talk radio programming with listening options, 24/7 streaming, or listen on demand. We also feature one-on-one segments with important guests, people who have something to say that you need to hear. And if you are an author listening to today's interview and would like to be featured on the network, please visit speakuptalkradio.com for all the details, or contact us at pr@speakuptalkradio.com. And right now, I have the pleasure of talking with and sharing author Angela Purbaugh with you. Angela is a Southern California native who lives in San Diego with her husband, teenage son, and toy Australian Shepherd. Her eldest son is a U.S. Marine stationed in Okinawa, Japan. Angela is a hairstylist, an entrepreneur, and a foodie. She is a lover of all things witty, random, weird, science fiction, fantasy, paranormal, and of course, psychology and metaphysics. Angela began writing in her spare time for fun. It was a hobby that scratched a creative itch in an exciting and challenging way. Her muse, a feisty little thing, pushed, prodded, and pressured her to keep writing. Not wanting to anger her muse, she wrote a few children's books, a screenplay, a young adult novel that was way too long, and made a few false starts on a few books which she never completed. With a full-time job, kids, and a husband, she found the early morning, around 4:30 a.m., to be the best time to listen to her muse and write with no interruptions. Her love of teen and young adult books and her son's obsession with video gaming and comic book characters sparked the seed for Combat Boy, a teen young adult sci-fi fantasy series, where she has two books so far, Combat Boy and the Monster Token and Combat Boy and the Lord of Monster Realm. The tone of the series is playful and humorous with strong moral undertones as it highlights a boy who strives to do well by others and whose downfall is a self-serving brother. Think Night at the Museum meets Comic-Con with monsters and a cosmic twist. Being a very visual thinker, Angela decided to make it her mission to write for reluctant readers. If her writing can pull a reluctant reader in and hold their attention, she believes it will do the same for all types of readers. And best of all, she knows a reluctant reader is only reluctant until he or she finds that fun, fast-paced story that turns them into an eager reader. That's her goal. She wants to create that kind of transformative magic with her writing. And from what fans are saying about Combat Boy and the Monster Token, it has that fast-paced, attention-holding mojo. And I am so ready to learn more. So welcome to the network, Angela.
Thank you. Thanks for having me, Pat.
Oh, it's my pleasure to have you here today. There's just so much that we can talk about. But before we get into your books, maybe if you would, share with us your journey as a foster mom to your son, who is now a U.S. Marine.
Oh, absolutely. Well, when I was in high school, I had a girlfriend of mine who told me that she had been in foster care. And when I heard her story, I decided right then and there that I wanted to become a foster parent. So anyways, fast forward till I was in my 30s after I had been married and I had my first son, Thomas, who was in kindergarten at the time that I decided that I really needed to look into foster care again because I, even though I wanted to have kids, I wasn't able to have any more. So I told my husband that I wanted to do foster care, and he basically told me that I was out of my mind. He didn't want to do it at that time, so I told him, well, if you think you might want to do it, then maybe let me know. So basically a year went by, and then suddenly he told me, yeah, I think I want to do foster care. So I was happy about that. And it takes about 20 hours of classes to get your foster care license, plus a few other, licensing things like getting your house inspected. But once we get that all done, I'll never forget the first time that we met Albert. He was living in a group home, and when we walked up to the front door, I saw five young boys with their faces pressed against the window looking at us.
No.
And suddenly they started to yell, Albert, your new mom is here. It was like totally surreal. I was like, oh, this is really happening. We had never even seen a picture of him. All we had to go by was just a packet that the foster care system would give you that just gives you his information. But anyways, we went inside and we met Albert. He was 10 years old at the time, very sweet. And He was also very small for his age. He was about, well, he was basically the same size and weight as my son Thomas, who was only going into second grade. But that was a good thing because, he wouldn't be intimidating mm-hmm. to my son. Mm-hmm. But anyways, we were just thrilled to have him be part of our family. And, of course, it wasn't easy. There was a lot of issues that he had to deal with. And luckily, we had great support through foster care with social workers. And he had a wonderful CASA. Her name is Kristen. And she helped us out a lot with a lot of the school stuff and the law stuff with court cases. And so for us, it was just a really wonderful experience.
What a story. What a beautiful story that you knew from the very first time you heard about it. I think that's what's so amazing. The first time you heard someone tell you about it, you knew that someday you were going to do it, and you in fact did.
Yeah, it was almost like a little deja vu, or well, I guess not deja vu, but like a little glimpse into the future, I think.
There you go. So now you are one happy family.
Yeah. Well, and I do have to say that I owe a lot of credit to my son Thomas because, until then he had been an only child. Mm-hmm. And he just embraced Albert with open arms. He never complained about sharing his room, his toys, and his parents. So the great thing is that Thomas and Albert they just became like best friends.
Mm-hmm.
Well, once they got over, getting used to each other. They had a few arguments here and there. And
sure.
Thomas only told me that I should send him back where we got him, I think, just 3 times.
Oh, my God. Well, you know what? That's a testament to you and your husband, obviously. Oh. If Thomas is that welcoming and warm-hearted, it obviously has something to do with the way he was raised. So congratulations
to
you and your whole family. Really, it's a beautiful story. We could be done with the interview now because it's really enough. Wonderful.
Thank you.
But you did mention in your bio that you have a creative muse, a feisty little thing. So obviously, we need to know more about that.
Sure. Let's see, as far back as I can remember, I was a prolific daydreamer, which I believe is a form of writing. I also was one of those kids that had an imaginary friend, and even though I couldn't see her, I knew she was there sprinkling creative thoughts into my mind. And now that I'm thinking about it, the first time I had an idea of what my little imaginary friend might look like was when I first saw Disney's Sunday night show. Tinkerbell suddenly blew over Disneyland with her magic wand and fairy dust, and I just knew my imaginary friend was a pixie like Tinkerbell. Mm-hmm. Only my pixie had dark hair, wings, and a dark, sparkly outfit. So I called her my dark pixie. Well, the older I got, I came to realize that my dark pixie was not my imaginary friend, but my creative muse. And like most muses, her job is to dive deep into the subconscious mind. Now, I have always thought of the subconscious mind as a cave. And in it, everything we experience, learn, and see is stored. And over time, those things are turned into colorful gemstones of creativity. I don't know two are alike, but they all hold creative information. And luckily for me, my dark pixie is great at digging them out of my subconscious mind. I think as soon as she grabs one, she flies it up to my conscious mind, and that is when the magic happens. Inside the gemstones are these images that play like a movie in my mind. I never know what I'm going to, see. I'm like a dream. They can be fascinating, but above all, very inspirational for writing. Which, thankfully, I realized when I was about 18, and that's when I started to write my daydreams down. Mm-hmm. And right away, I learned that writing was like putting a real complicated puzzle together. And because I loved putting puzzles together, I just started to love writing.
This is a fascinating story. I love this muse.
I know. I love her, too. That's why I ended up put her. I insisted that she be one of the characters in my Combat Boy series.
I know. I saw that, and I was wondering, I was going to ask you where she came from, but now you told us.
Now I told you, and I tell you, she has always been there for me.
Oh, my gosh.
just a spunky little thing. I read Stephen King's book on writing and years ago, and he, well, I read it every year before I start a new book just because I want to focus on, you know, somebody who really knows what they're doing. And he said he has a creative muse, but his is a little bit different. He has to go down this elevator, I think he said, to where his muse is and kind of seek him out in this dingy old place. And his muse looks like a, I think he said, a troll who smokes a cigar.
Oh, good grief.
Doesn't really like to talk too much. So that kind of makes sense for him since he writes such dark stuff.
Very true. I like your pixie better.
Oh, well, thank you. Me too.
Oh, my gosh. How fun for you, really.
Yeah.
Yes. Now, I mentioned reluctant readers in your bio. What is, or maybe who is a reluctant reader, and what made you decide to focus on that particular group of readers?
Well, the thing is, I think a reluctant reader is usually a kid who might have a learning disability or ADHD and just has a hard time focusing. And because I had ADHD, I know what it's like to not be able to, you know, find a book that really grabs you and keeps your interest. And actually, both of my sons, Albert has ADHD, and he's got actually a couple extra scoops of H in there. He was very hyper. Mm. And my son Thomas has ADD, which is the more mellow version.
Right.
So they were reluctant readers. And so because I knew what it was like, I knew what they needed. So I decided to, first of all, bribe them to read. I told them, I will go to the library. I will try to pick really good books. And if you read a book, I'll give you a dollar. So I went to the library and I just tried to find the most exciting books that I could find. And I brought them home and they picked one. And lo and behold, they didn't just read one book that month. They read all five.
Wow.
So that was pretty good.
Yes.
So I felt like I am onto something. And then I would read all those books as well. And that's when I really fell in love with middle grade and young adult books.
So having a bit of ADHD yourself and then having that in your family, you realize the obstacles, I guess, that children and parents go through. And so your two books, the Combat Boy books, let's talk about those. Tell us about them.
Sure. Well, Combat Boy and the Monster Token, it's about two brothers who go to Comic-Con. And Tom, he's the younger brother. He stumbles across this arcade, mysterious arcade game, and he plays the game after this troll tells him if he plays and he qualifies, he'll be able to go to this secret game that's played below the floors of Comic-Con, and it's the most exciting game ever created, video game. And, of course, he wants to win it, so he tells the troll that he already is a pro gamer, and he's beat out many adults. So he gets this ticket, and it allows him and his brother, Joey, to go down to where this almost carnival-like area is. And there's a game portal, and they get their guns, and fun guns for going into a video game world and a portal. So basically, they go there, and but the catch is, whoever wins the game is the only one who can get out with their soul. So that's basically the plot line there.
And that was the Monster Talk.
Combat Boy and the Monster.
Before you get to the next book, I want to tell you that the dialogue between those two brothers in the Monster Token as they entered the San Diego Comic-Con was so real that I felt like I was hearing it rather than reading it.
Oh, really?
Mm-hmm.
Oh, that's great. Yeah, I'm very visual and audio. Mm-hmm. So yeah, usually for me when I'm doing my final drafts, I always have to read it out loud and make sure it sounds right.
Absolutely, and it was very clear as I was reading that you have two boys in your real life. Like I said, I felt like I was hearing it or watching it or something. It was a very interesting sensation, which I appreciated.
Oh, great. Yeah. And I thought setting the book up where it starts at Comic-Con, really added a lot because, you know, that's the book is sci-fi and fantasy, and that's pretty much where everybody goes to celebrate everything sci-fi and fantasy. And it was a good transition from our real world, kind of, into the, you know, kind of like the hero's journey where the main character leaves the real world and goes into this strange world with the monsters and, you know, tokens to collect, and he needs to change himself, overcome his fears and his, you know, his fears and his feelings of not being able to accomplish it. He has to change, which, you know, I think Tom, he's a good role model, and I have him be dyslexic, and I understand those feelings of feeling a little bit insecure about yourself, put into a new situation, and just having to overcome your fears and obstacles.
When I was thinking about, oh my, for a reluctant reader, this was moving very quickly and was grabbing you within the first page. It had you. So tell us about the second book then.
Well, that actually takes off right about a few hours after the first book ends. So, not to give too much away, but anyway, so Tom's just kind of trying to relax after his really busy day, and Joey, Tom had shut down the game, and Joey, he wants to go back into the game. So he actually had snuck back a paralyzing fortune teller dart, and he pretty much paralyzes Tom. He steals these tokens that could shut the game down, and he starts up the game again because he really wants his flower nectar that he has become addicted to from when he was in the first game.
Now, as you were writing, thinking to write the second book, the sequel, was it a difficult task, or was it easy just to keep going with it?
You know, it was really easy because as I was writing the first book, I was like actually seeing the second book happen.
Okay.
I was really not sure when I was writing the first book if I should try to incorporate both ideas, but then I thought that it would be easier, the book would be shorter for reluctant readers if I kept them in two separate books, which then the first book is more like going into the game world and experiencing that side, and just Tom, who's Combat Boy, and Joey and Dark Pixie more than the other characters. Mm-hmm. For the second book, I wanted to make that more of a character-driven story where you get to meet the other 10 players that went in with them, see a few of those characters' backstories, what happened to them when they were in the previous game, and then I wanted to really make that a real dynamic mix of kids, and some of them have their own desires of maybe being villains, where some of them really want to be good guys. So there's a lot, just like the dialogue in the first book, there's a lot of that going on. So basically that was my idea, was to make that book the character-driven book. And that book is actually more fast-paced than the first book.
Oh, wow. Okay.
Because I wanted to kind of capture the energy of Joey, because he's so hyper. So I think I did it. And I got a really good review from Kirkus.
I read that, yes.
Yeah.
I know.
It'll be in their Kirkus Review magazine this month.
I know. How exciting, huh?
Yes. So very glad about that.
And I think it was wise to do two books, because as we're talking about reluctant readers, then you hook them on the first book, and now they've got to read another book, kids.
Yeah, and the second book is a little bit longer than the first book. Mm-hmm. And I'm sure that the third book's going to be a little bit longer. You know, so I didn't want to hit them with like 1,000 or anything. But yeah, so I'm about 80 pages into the third book.
Okay.
So.
And is that it?
No, it's going to be actually a pretty long series, I'm thinking. Mm-hmm. I mean, I have about 6 books kind of lately outlined in my mind.
All right.
And that's kind of what I do. I just kind of have a real light outline. Kid goes into Monster Realm and has to come out with a soul. And I like to just let my imagination do the rest, you know, not have a heavy plot. I like the characters to kind of dictate what's going to happen and then drive the story in different ways that I will be, you know, surprised about. Because, I mean, I feel like if I'm not surprised, then maybe the readers won't be surprised, and it makes it more interesting.
Yes, yes.
That's just my opinion.
No, and as you're talking about characters, let's delve into that a bit. Are these people that you know, they're composites of people? Or?
They're kind of like a mix of different people. Tom, well, and they're also actually, I have to say, Pixie, Joey, and Tom are actually a lot, they have a lot of me in them. Joey, he's very hyperactive. He's always like just, his hand raises, you know, before he even knows what he's getting himself into. And so he's always kind of getting into trouble. I used to be like that when I was a kid. But then Tom, he's, like I said, he's a little bit more self, he gets embarrassed. If he's dyslexic and he's been, you know, I'm thinking in my mind, he's had, you know, he's been bullied in different things. And so he's one of his biggest fears is to get embarrassed and be publicly, you know, shamed or something like that. And then, of course, there's Pixie. So she's just really the gung-ho, like, I'm the smart one and she's going to tell the boys what to do because a lot of times they seem like they're not quite as bright as her.
Oh my gosh, I love her. So as you're working and fleshing out these characters, do they lead you like bad kids, or are you in control of them? Do they talk to you? Do you listen? Let's just kind of figure out what your relationship is with your characters.
Oh, well, for the most part, it's the antagonist characters that they kind of come forward. They want me to add them into extra chapters. They always want me to add extra dialogue when I'm trying to take out unnecessary words. They're always trying to steal the show. So that's when I have to kind of put my foot down. No, that's enough of you. You know, I got to let my protagonists have their time and you'll get yours. So they really do seem to talk to me a lot. And it could be in a dream. Sometimes I dream about them or scenes or, you know, or if I'm on a walk. Or sometimes, like, if I'm stuck with something in the story where I think, well, maybe they would do this or maybe they would do that, then, like, if I'm on a walk, I'll just kind of, like, in my mind, imagine that they're walking beside me and I'll think, oh, what would you do, you know? Mm-hmm. And then I'll have them come up with a few things, and I'll pick the one that I like the best.
Here you are taking a walk by yourself, talking away, and people are saying,
well, just in my mind.
Oh, okay.
Just in my mind. Nowadays, I could just bring a cell phone, and I could act like I was.
There you go. No one's going to know the difference.
Yeah, no, it's all just in my mind.
Oh, I love it. Now, what about your covers? Those are so vivid. How did you come about?
I just decided I wanted to just keep it real simple, and the colors real bold, and that worked out really well, and I like the font that he used, so I just try to kind of copy that type of a look with the second book.
Okay.
Real simple. Mm-hmm. And the books, each book, the colors actually are important in the series. They will be, because each book, each color actually kind of represents a token.
Oh, okay.
Token. So that's why I kind of decided to go with this more solid color.
I had a feeling there was something behind that. I don't know. I was just very struck by it, so I thought I'd ask. All right, let's talk a little about your writing process. When, where do you write? How often?
See, for the most part, when I'm really seriously into writing my books, I'm kind of just like a free flow, everyday writer. I usually just set a goal at the beginning of each week to write a chapter. Then the following week, my goal is to edit the chapter and polish it the best that I can. Then when I'm not sitting in front of the computer writing, that's when I like to flood my mind with the images, dialogue, and action for the next chapter. I like to act like a movie director behind the camera, focusing on each character, how they speak, move, and what they see, taste, smell, feel, hear, all that.
Sure.
I like to zoom in on what is interesting and then and amusing, and then cut the rest out. And then I will just run the chapter through my mind countless times. And then once it feels to me like it's a vivid memory, and it's full of like emotion and energy, and that's when I love to sit down at the computer and get to work. But by that time, it doesn't really seem like work, because you know, I know what I want to write, and I know how it should feel when I read it. And for me, it is all about how it feels, the rhythm, the tone, and the emotion. And if it doesn't feel right, I just edit it until it does. Yeah, but of course, you know, pulling out those images and the emotions I have in my mind and putting them down on paper is not easy to do. Mm-hmm. But it definitely is rewarding.
Well, absolutely. I mean, you've got all this creativity flowing around you, and yet you have somewhat of an organized system to get this done.
Yeah, you know, I don't really know where that all comes from, but you know, over the years, I just would read every book I could get my hands on writing. Mm-hmm. And one of the best things that I think I ever did try was writing a screenplay, because those are just so, they're like so formulaic, and not formulaic, but just you have to hit plot points by different pages. Mm-hmm. So you have to be super organized. I thought just because a screenplay was like, oh, it's only 90 pages. How great. It is going to be easy. Oh, man, that was like the hardest thing I ever tried.
Interesting.
But I did not give up until I actually did it, mm-hmm. even though the screenplay probably totally sucked. But
at least you went through the process.
I was determined to hit those plot points at the right times. And to me, that really helped me with editing mm-hmm. more than anything else.
Interesting. Yeah, I've heard that about screenplay writing from other folks that I've spoken to. Now, how did you go about publishing your book?
honestly, I was just too impatient to jump through all the hoops that it takes to get an agent and a publishing deal. And having my book on Amazon was on my bucket list of things to do before I die. And because I had been feeling ill for quite a while, I thought, well, I should just take the shortcut, grab the fast pass to Amazon and self-publish, mm-hmm. which was great, except for the same week that I launched my book, Combat Boy and the Monster Token, I had to have surgery.
Oh.
And my condition was much worse than my doctor thought, and 3 months later, I had to have even more surgery, big surgery, like the robotic exploratory surgery.
Oh, good grief.
Ugh, yeah. And, you know, because of all that, because I thought I might die that year, I didn't even bother with marketing my book. Of course, I felt so bad, but, you know, I just needed to try to recover, and I just wanted to get into my second book because that helps me just mm-hmm. feel good. Yeah, but, like, the only thing that I did do that year for marketing was that I did send it to Kirkus, and I was just lucky that they gave me such a great review mm-hmm. and put me in the magazine. So
there you go.
My book didn't get a whole lot of attention. I was just down the whole entire year.
Well, I hope you're better and hope you're feeling better.
Oh, no, I am, yeah. No, yeah. I'm great now.
Good, good, good. As you've been writing these books, what have you learned about yourself?
I would say that I learned that I'm pretty disciplined, and that let my mind kind of go and let the characters come in and let them do the work. And I'm not a control freak in that regard, and I learned that about myself, which I think is a good thing when you're a writer.
Yes.
Because I really think that those creative ideas are what really make a story special. And, you know, if it's too plotted out and too formulaic, then I think people read it that way.
Mm-hmm. I always ask that question because I do think that writing is a very cathartic experience for the author, for the writer, and I know that you have to learn something in that process about yourself as well, and I'm always interested to hear.
I think for me, I think the main character, Tom, him going into the monster realm and having to really face his limitations that he believed he had, and overcome them with thinking positive and believing in himself more. I think for me, it was just kind of something that I know was in my past that I had to do in order to be able to write, because I've never really taken a writing class in my own life. So even putting a book out there, to sending it to Kirkus, was like really terrifying to me, because I'm like, oh, what do I know? You know, I've just been winging this on my own.
Mm-hmm. Well, you winged it very well.
Oh, well, thank you.
You're a good winger.
Thank you.
Well, as we begin to wrap up, do you have any advice then that you might want to share with other authors?
Well, I would just say try to learn the business side of writing. Mm-hmm. I kind of put that off far too long, and now I find that I'm playing catch-up, and it kind of gives me a lot of anxiety. You know, it's just such a challenge to find the time to write a novel, a blog, and keep up with social media. Mm-hmm. I just, like, recently this year, finally got a Twitter account, got my Facebook fan page, I got on Pinterest and Instagram and LinkedIn, and I don't even have time to do any of that stuff, hardly. Still, like, a mystery to me how it all kind of works and ties in together. But, I watched something on YouTube, and they said, oh, you got to get that Hootsuite. So I thought, ooh, well, maybe this will make it easier. So I got the Hootsuite, and and I haven't really been using it. And then every week they send me email saying, oh, this is your progress for the week. And I'm like, oh, no, I failed again.
Oops.
I didn't do anything.
Need to be more than one person.
It's really hard to be an author these days.
Mm-hmm. That's true. It is. I mean, you need to be more than one person, because just the whole promotion and marketing side is a full-time job.
That's what I always say.
Yeah.
I'm like, I'm just one gal.
Yeah. Well, so you just do the best that you can, and obviously it's the writing that needs to get done first. Otherwise, you have nothing to market. So.
That's what I was thinking, mm-hmm. And because I thought, well, if I stop with the first book and start marketing, I probably will never finish that second book.
There you go.
So,
all right, we got to get that dark pixie to work here.
Yeah, exactly. I'm trying to, like, focus around that third book. I'm like, come on, you do it while I'm sleeping, and
seriously,
work together and get it done.
Slacker. Well, now, is there anything we missed that you would like to talk about today?
The third book, it's going to be called Combat Boy and the Scuttler's Portal, okay. Which that's going to be a different than the first two books, where the kids don't go into the game, but a portal from that world comes into this world. So it's a little bit different. It's not like they're going to play a game. And some characters from Monster Realm show up in this world and cause a lot of trouble. So that's more the third book.
Okay. So we've got something to look forward to, folks. So with that in mind, where can people go to learn more about you, and where can they purchase your books?
Oh, well, go to combatboyseries.com, and you can get the books on Amazon.
So it's combatboyseries.com is the website, or Amazon. And I encourage everyone to get copies of these books. And especially, as you said, the reluctant readers, you've got them hooked on the very first page. And then now that you've got all these series coming along, there's going to be plenty for everyone to read. So I really appreciate your taking the time today to share you and your books and your life story with us. Thank you so much, Angela.
Oh, thank you. It was a pleasure.